Welcome to Simple Living Works, episodes 76 and 77. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host for this two-parter with my guests from Celebrating Ugly Food and Fighting for Clean Water. If you're new to this podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue. This was a fun educational project for the public, playing on our unfortunate need for produce that's perfect in appearance. We provided handouts for participants summarizing the need for food safety and security, tips, resources, etc. Every Sunday in August, we had speakers, film, music, worship, and fun while exploring the intersection of faith, food, and water in a time of drought. San Luis Obispo County, also called the Central Coast, midway between San Francisco and Los Angeles, is the second largest county in the state, space-wise, and is the epicenter of California's prolonged drought. In addition to eating, the event promoted food and water conservation, promoted gleaning efforts in the county and efforts to feed the hungry locally, nationally, and globally, and reduce food waste by debunking convenience in our homes and restaurants. Some of the ugly food facts we learned: 40% of food in America goes to waste in fields and gardens, in stores, restaurants, and schools. Ugly produce can actually be healthier than pretty food. Some imperfect cracked fruit, for example, contains more antioxidants. France now requires supermarkets to give away unsold food. We also provided tips such as carrying a reusable take-home container in our cars saves leftovers from our restaurants' meals and keeps our single-use containers out of the landfill. In part one, Amy Beveridge, pastor of Bethel Lutheran Church in Templeton, California, introduces how the concept of ugly food evolved there. Then Gail McNichols Oliver, a founder of Glean Slow, and Emily Wilson, Glean Slow's volunteer coordinator, explain how gleaning rescues and distributes produce in San Luis Obispo County. And we link, if you would, to an additional extended interview with Gail in the show notes. Also link to biblical reflections by Pastor Amy on gleaning related to Jesus' feeding of the multitudes. Also in the show notes is a link to the promotional materials for Bethel's Ugly Food Project, which another congregation or group could use. It includes a variety of bulletin inserts, media releases, and a basic project workflow timeline. And even more links to the public broadcasting documentary, Tossed Out, Food Waste in America, and to video shorts from Lutheran World Relief. In part two, Paula Wansa tells a moving story of how a small group of dedicated women cleaned up California's most toxic waste dump in their community. It's an example of how people fight for clean water. In the show notes is a link to the powerful documentary, Thirsty for Justice, The Struggle for the Human Right to Clean Water.
Well, to start Ugly Food Month here at Bethel, I need to rewind a bit and explain just how we arrived. A few years ago, before anyone was talking about a prolonged drought here in California, I was sitting at my desk reading the newsletter from Gloria Day in Santa Maria. Pastor Greg Kinsey always writes up a great article, usually about what he's reading or studying with the church. It was Lent. He was writing about imperfection. He recounted how Navajo rugs, and maybe you're familiar with this, how Navajo rugs, those beautifully crafted pieces of art, how they are made with deliberate imperfections woven into the pattern. Their crafters did so and then said, that imperfection is where the Spirit moves in and out of the world. As it was Lent, Pastor Greg got to thinking about the cross. He wondered about the cross as a deliberate imperfection woven into the fabric of Jesus' life. The cross, the imperfection, as the place where the Spirit moves in and out of the world. I marveled, too, as I read his words, imperfection. Imperfection, the location of our transformation. His insight and his poetic reflection has stayed with me through ministry. I think of it often. So fast forward a few years to 2014 and on into the summer of 2015. Kathy Marquardt's well is drying up. John Anderson will have an early harvest of grapes. Our county livestock is being sold off to the Midwest at staggering rates. Over in Cambria, where I'm living at the time, the politics of water is in full swing. While the passionate local debates drone on, everyone starts showering in buckets. Others, like us, replace the most water-wasting appliances in our house. And the neighbors who have been watering their patio flowers with gray water have discovered both a tomato plant and a corn stalk in their geraniums. It was in those days that I learned about the pomegranates. A study was done on this specific fruit to see what the drought was doing to its nutrients. A lot of foodies, as many of us, I don't know if I'm a foodie, I certainly enjoy food, had been thinking about how to live with this new dry reality. There's been plenty of ugly food. As you probably well know, food that looks unappealing to the eye does not usually make it to the grocery aisles. Lost food, lost water, lost resource. We might savor our crazily curved zucchini and other asymmetric veggies from our gardens, but we don't usually find them at the stores. And the stat on this is something like 40% of the food we grow finds its way to the landfill as a nation. But there has been an interesting discovery, at least about the pomegranates and possibly other kinds of fruit I think they're trying to find out. When pomegranates grow in harsh conditions, they might crack and stay small, they might be ugly, but the fruit itself produces more nutrients. Stress triggers the production of antioxidants in the fruit, which in turn, when eaten, nourishes the human body more fully. I marveled for weeks at the resilience of the pomegranate. I did. I just walked around like, wow, those pomegranates. I remembered the Navajo rug and its purposeful imperfection. I remembered that our entire Christian faith rests in the idea that you cannot always trust what you see on the surface of things. God's work of saving grace is often hidden behind ugliness that we would rather ignore. The pomegranate seemed to hold all that wisdom. I don't think that any of us are going to get to heaven because we bought a cracked pomegranate. Eating in America has turned into its own religion of sorts, with creeds and belief systems and promises of life eternal if we just follow whatever diet or eating fad the moment requires. I think we can resist those attitudes, and yet I don't think we can deny that God has something to say about eating. And especially God has something to say about eating in a just community, in living within our means, using wisely the resources we have been given. Communities of faith are always called to the work of transformation. They are always called to the dogged work of repairing the breaches. Landfills of rotting food in an age of child hunger and drought are one such breach. So I wonder, can we build a spiritual discipline of eating the ugly food of our world so we might live a deeper accordance to the vision that God has for human health? Can we cultivate an awareness, a kind of prayer and compassion for the people who struggle the most deeply in our drought, for the families living in the Central Valley with no clean water, prayers for all the livelihoods lost to these years of endless sun? I mourn myself for all the voices of frogs and small wood critters that I no longer hear in the backyard. Can we eat abiding by the needs of the land and its people? How can our faith guide us in this practice? Well, sometime after taking all that in, Gerald and I were sharing ugly food stories. One of us, I don't know who anymore, said, "Let's have an ugly food banquet at church." It felt compelling to both of us, and before we knew it, the idea evolved, and here we are, August 2000, 2016, celebrating ugly food and taking a lens of faith to the dimensions of our drought. Drought is a primary mover of the biblical story. Drought is a character in its own right, driving the narratives of our spiritual ancestors who journeyed, depending on the rains and the supplies of food, who encountered God along the paths of their migration and the struggle to live well. These questions have always been with us, and so we wrestle with them in a new day, a new situation, a different place, and yet old needs with old wisdom.
Organization called Backyard Harvest, and our motto was plant an extra row, and we volunteered to go and pick the fallen fruit. We volunteered to go to other people's gardens when they were on vacation and harvest their tomatoes and their zucchini or their overabundance of whatever it was that was at peak season. Many times we were called to harvest zucchinis by the hundreds of pounds. And very, very quickly it became an overwhelming job. And we noticed two things. The first thing was that people wanted to share. And the second was that people were in need of food. And so this evolution began where we became very popular, and my phone never stopped ringing. And sometimes my entire front yard would be filled with bags of zucchini or tomatoes or corn. It would just mysteriously appear. And it's very funny. We sold that house a number of years ago, and the owner still doesn't understand why. We didn't disclose that. But after a couple of years, my friends became very tired and they got distracted with really the business of life, and the gleaning became overwhelming. It was more than a full-time job. And so I began doing it by myself. And I soon found that I couldn't do it alone. And I became very discouraged when suddenly I received a phone call. It's funny how these things happen. From someone in San Luis Obispo. Her name was Carolyn Eicher. And she had the same idea. And it turned out that many, many people in our communities had been harvesting unused produce, had been picking up fallen fruits and donating it to people in need, whether through the food bank or through their churches or just people they knew. And so Carolyn took over Backyard Harvest, and she turned it into what is now called GleanSlow. So GleanSlow is started from little tiny seeds in the North County, and it has now bloomed as part of a partner agency with the food bank with hundreds of volunteers. Our work is never done, either as growers or gleaners, and we glean large fields, we glean backyards, and we glean farmers markets. And after the service, I want to share with you some of the wonderful things that are happening in Templeton at your farmers markets. And that community spirit is very much part of what we're doing. And I'm going to let Emily talk for a few minutes. And Pastor's right. Emily is an expert at gleaning, and she might tell you her favorite gleans.
Yeah.
So she is the future of gleaning.
Thank you all for having me again. I may be an expert in gleaning, but I think all of you could also be experts in gleaning with a little experience. So as Gail said, we've grown a lot since the conception of GleanSlow. Now we're approaching about 1 million pounds of food we've collected since 2010 when it became GleanSlow, which is very exciting. My experience, I've been involved with GleanSlow for about 3 years now since I moved to the area, and it's just kind of a program that made sense to me when I first discovered it. You're addressing a need in our county. There's 1 in 6 people who don't know where their food is going to come from for their next meal. Yet we grow enough fresh produce here to feed each person 7.5 pounds of fruits and vegetables each day. So it's something that made a lot of sense. And when people hear that, they're just really excited to get involved with connecting those two pieces. So it's been really fun. And being involved as a volunteer was always really fulfilling experience, and I signed on last year as the volunteer coordinator, so that's what I'm doing now, and I still get to go on gleans every once in a while. And it's always, somebody told me the other day, I was with a volunteer out on a glean, and she said, every time I go on a glean, it's like going on a mini vacation. So I want to put that on our website as our slogan or something. Yeah, it's a great experience working with, you get to meet so many great people, see some of the most beautiful areas in our county. Up here in North County, I've seen some of the most incredible areas. Like Gail said, we do backyards, but we also do large-scale farms and yeah, there's a lot to be done, and it's always a great experience.
One of the things that happened in the evolution of Gleanslow is that in addition to people calling and saying, I have fallen fruit, or I have a garden that needs tending, the generosity of people have opened their hearts and fields to us, as Emily well knows. So it's not just these are leftover fruits, it's I have this 150 acres of organic produce, come and spend 3 hours harvesting it. I would like to share it with Gleanslow and the food bank. So it's not just the leftovers. It has developed a spirit of true generosity from many people in the community. And it's really wonderful for me to be able to go to the Templeton Farmers Market and have those farmers donate boxes of their fresh produce, and I take it to Loaves and Fishes, and Monday morning it is distributed throughout the community. Or we take it to the food bank, and Monday morning it goes to the senior nutrition program or children's lunch program. We know that one in six people in our community is what we call food insecure. That means they don't have enough to eat. It means they're living on the edge of how much money are they going to have to eat and how are they going to make that happen. This kind of came as a surprise to me, and after I realized it, I thought, well, that's naive. Students at Cal Poly go hungry, and it's not something that's talked about. You would think if a student has enough for tuition, they have enough to eat, and this is not the case. There are many people living on that edge of hunger, and so they have a food pantry there because there are students that don't have enough to eat. There are people in our community that don't have enough to eat. So we're working hard on bringing that figure down. And now 49% of the food that the food bank shares with the food insecure is made up of produce. That is a phenomenal statistic. We have gone from canned fruits and vegetables, high in sodium and sugar, to fresh produce. And it's all because of the generosity of the community, and we cannot do it without volunteers.
And just to speak to the importance of what we do, I think it's really unique that our food bank is able to distribute that much fresh produce. I think a lot of food banks in the country struggle to provide really nutritious, fresh produce to people. And a figure like 50% is incredible, especially when we're able to supplement with local, fresh local produce. I sometimes am able to drop off some of our gleanings directly to agencies where I can hand things to people who will take them home or will eat them right there. And it's to see how excited people can get about getting a box of fresh apples when all they've seen is pastries and bread is incredible.
I'm going to end with just a short story that I want to share with you. I've been gleaning the Templeton Farmers Market for about 3 years. It's a family project, and that means we take boxes from the food bank, we distribute it to the vendors, and if they choose, they donate the food to us and we take it to the food bank. About 2 years ago, there was a large fire up in Yosemite, and my beautiful family home of five generations was totally destroyed along with 10 acres of old growth trees. It was absolutely leveled. The cast iron melted. There was literally nothing left. And my elderly father survived. Nothing else did. And I knew that was the most important thing. But I spent that week sifting through the ashes and helping other trauma victims sort out their lives, and I was exhausted. And I remembered that I needed to come and glean the farmer's market. So I got in my car that morning. I drove to town here. I was covered in ash and smelled of soot and smoke. I had my boxes on on the park bench. I was eating a taco, and I was really forlorn. And I looked around, and all of the boxes were gone, and they were coming back to me full. It was this quiet moment of beauty, and the spirit was alive.
You've been listening to my friends from Celebrating Ugly Food and Fighting for Clean Water, a month-long project from Bethel Lutheran Church, Templeton, California, which included several themes: clean water in a time of drought, gleaning of leftover produce, culminating in an ugly food banquet. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to simplelivingworks@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org. Click window number 3. Time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works podcast. Because these episodes are a bit shorter than usual, I'm delighted to include a full rendition of our closing theme song. If you're new to Simple Living Works podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen a little longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye here. Peace. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will now through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember that you can listen to all episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click Preview, Backup, and choose the episodes you want with or without show notes. Subscriptions to this podcast and our weekly blog are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe in iTunes to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, which I produce and co-host with Jubilee One Earth Economics. Send us your email address to receive the free email, the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive way of life. It's not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everybody's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, live simply that others may simply live, as our closing theme song proclaims. It's a balance of personal responsibility and advocacy for just public policy. It's more than personal happiness, though that's quite important. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the 5 life standards of Living More with Less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre. I've discussed these standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The 3 parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video, and links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Come everyone who has thirst, those who have nothing come by. Why spend your labor for things that simply do not satisfy? Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. The bread in your cupboard belongs to one who is hungry out there. And the coats in your closet unused could warm up the ones who stand bare. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. See how the wealth you acquire is borne on the backs of the poor, whose children beg daily for food, whose land feeds your child who wants more. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Your children who need their own rooms lament that the forest will die, and those who would join field to field must stop long enough to ask why. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. God chose the weak of the world to shame the way of the strong. Learn how to live from the poor. Their wisdom will help us belong. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Do not conform to the world. Be certain that better's not more. Contentment will transform your need, awakening what God has in store. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.